Hey, can I ask you guys what you thought about the movie for my stupid fucking podcast that nobody listens to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a lot more brutal than I expected. It's a pretty tough watch.
Extremely tense. A lot of just pain's agony screaming.
Yeah. That was pretty brutal.
Gorier than I thought it was going to be.
Gorier?
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, guys.
Yeah. All right, man. Yeah, have a good one.
Have a good night.
He's back. That's the fourth fucking time he's done that.
Is he peeking or probing?
Peeking with serious intent to probe.
Alpha 2, we might have guys starting to move on our position.
Copy, we're getting a buildup of activity here too.
Yeah, I definitely see weapons at this point.
Yeah, we have definite massing.
But just to clarify, you intended to send us a video of a real piece of work.
Yeah. Of a total asshole, yes.
We should have realized immediately when his account was called Administrative Results.
Yeah, I just this is a gun YouTuber that I was aware of, who I don't watch, but he's a troop fucker, right? That's what I've been calling these guys. These guys are troop fuckers. He's one of these we love to go down to the range and review shit. I was telling Connor, like, he's the kind of guy who would, like, book a ticket and do videos at, like, SHOT Show, right? And, like, I just want to talk to real, you know, like, operators and shit.
Well, fucking, in the thing, he mentions going to watch the movie in the theater with his troop buddies, and he's like, the way he's sucking them off, you think, like it's so fucking disturbing. These people are awful, man.
Hey, man, that's America. I'm sorry to tell you.
Like, yeah, it kind of is.
The good news is, Amr, a lot of vets find these guys incredibly annoying. Do not want to fucking hang out with them.
Insofar as the vets find these guys annoying, the vets also find each other annoying. That was the one thing that I thought didn't come through. We can talk about it later, but one thing didn't come through enough in the film is the utter disdain they have for regular soldiers, civilians, other branches of the military, other types of special operators that they don't see as, like, suitable. It really is ironic because they have the same affect as, like, the IJA and the IJN, like the Imperial Japanese Navy versus the Imperial Japanese Army. Like, you think that this is what they've become. They've become the psychos who would, like, do, like, they would fight with each other in the middle of a fucking meeting because they think the other branch are swine.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that's very prominent in America. I mean, my dad was a Navy man, and the things he says about other branches is very... It threw me off, and then they all call him gay because he's in the Navy, and it's like... It's really... I don't understand it, but I think it's really, like, it's half camaraderie and half elitism, I guess.
I really would have paid good money, Amr, to, like, sit in these meetings because I assume they had to contact a bunch of these guys to get their side of the story. Right. So, like, herding those cats in a room, being like, no, I was the guy who was on point. You were in the kitchen. I was the one downstairs. I fired the first shot. I did the first engagement. Right. Like, if we know anything about
you, do you want to get into it? Because I want, like, there's so much there. Like, yeah. Like the scene where the guy does push-ups in, like, house.
Okay.
I guarantee you they all sat around, mentioned as, you know, like, isn't he crazy? Dave is the craziest motherfucker we got. We were in the middle of the fucking house and he was doing push-ups.
The guy who's obsessively doing, like, push-ups and shit, like, on the mission.
Oh, yeah. And if I remember correctly, he looked like a Will Poulter type. He was, like, really hot and striking.
Yeah. Well, they did. I gotta say, they
he
did
wasn't
get
Will Poulter. That's the thing. The only two people I recognized in that entire movie, well, three. So Michael Gandolfini was there later on.
Hell yeah.
I recognized him. I recognized John Blackthorne from Shogun, and I kept expecting him to say, "Get your hands off me, you papist." Will Poulter, who I recognized from The Bear and what's it called? Shameless. Those are the only ones who I recognized vaguely. And the biggest problem I have with that fucking film, do we want to get into it? Do we want to get into it now? Or are we recording, right?
Let's go ahead and introduce it. Hey, everybody. Okay. Welcome to another episode of Propaganda. That is Wednesday, April, what's today, 28th?
The 29th.
It is the 29th.
Tuesday, April 29th.
oh my fucking, I'm so tired. It's summer vacation and like I'm checked the fuck out. Hey everybody, it is Tuesday, April 29th at 8:07 p.m. Central Standard Time. You know, it's another episode of Propagandos, and we would like to welcome back Amr, officially our most frequent guest on the show.
Thank you.
Amr, thank you for joining
us. Do I get a little medal, a little
and our favorite,
some kind of t-shirt or something?
Sorry, what your is mic is cutting out. I don't know. I couldn't hear what you just said. Something.
What's the Chapo bit? Like a challenge coin? This episode is the challenge coin
episode.
We will
make you a CIA challenge coin. Yes.
Sure.
It's so funny that shit started out for clandestine operations, and then somebody found out about it, and they're like, hey, they get trinkets for murdering people? We need to get that too. Yeah.
Well, we wanted to bring Amr back today because a new Alex Garland movie has come out that Amr was a little vocal about on Twitter that he absolutely hated. But you also, I mean, we'll get into this later, but there was another movie that you pitched that we wanted to talk about that we will probably touch on near the end of the episode here. But we wanted to talk about Alex Garland's new movie, Warfare. What did the movie get right? What did the movie get wrong? What is propaganda about this?
Anti-war is a question that a lot of people have been asking. Yeah, we'll get into it. So I've been excited about this. I don't know if this has been long awaited by our listeners, but it's been long awaited by me because it's been a week and a half and I really don't have anybody to talk to about this movie with except for like Connor because nobody's seen this film. So
I hope it stays that way.
Golly.
To be clear, I listened to your episode on Civil War and I vehemently disagreed with most of it. I will agree in the abstract that the movie was good at revealing how soulless and psychopathic journalists are. Like,
yes.
Like,
and that was a fantasy, Amr. That was not a real life telling.
To the extent that like Alex Garland tried to convey anything, it was completely inept and warbled. I think that message was conveyed in spite of his efforts, largely because Kaylee Stainey or whatever her name is, the young broad, she did a really good job of like showing you her psyche being degraded over time. And also, the only scene in that movie that was actually an objectively good scene was carried entirely by Jesse Plemons. Like, Jesse Plemons in fucking pink sunglasses. What kind of American are you? No, that fucking nails it. Everything else in that movie was dog shit. I don't know why you Americans are so cocked. You let a British guy dictate to you what your Civil War would look like. Like, something needs to be done about that.
We kind of need an outside perspective, maybe, because I think...
Yeah, a Canadian can tell you exactly what the American Civil War would look like.
Well, let's hear it. What do you got?
Everybody in the United States is just going to argue about like which side, the side that they're on, just like owning the other side, right? Everybody thinks that they're going to win. Nobody wants to be realistic about anything.
Well, the classic Radio War Nerd mantra is amateurs talk strategy, professionals talk logistics. Every one of these guys wants to talk about like tanks and guns and whatnot, and no one wants to talk about water, pharmaceuticals, delivery of corn, etc. and so forth. My Canadian perspective is we as Canada will pick a client and back it to the hilt, and we'll be at BC by Christmas at the latest.
The War of 1812 Redux.
One thing, I don't know if we touched on it in the episode, because I feel like I've been kicking myself for not touching on it, but the teaming up of California and Texas in Civil War and how everyone kept rolling their eyes at how unrealistic it is. Look, you make strange bedfellows. Kamala Harris and Dick Cheney were like campaigning together. So like, obviously that's not a Civil War, but like, it is not outside the realm of possibility for two factions that normally don't like each other to team up.
I think the biggest problem with that isn't that they wouldn't team up as such. It's this Americans still conceptualize your conflict in like these wildly outdated concepts of like the state, each individual state. So it's like California would never team up with Texas, where like I could see the elites of LA and Austin and Dallas teaming up, but then like it would look more like Syria than anything.
The map
would just be like red and blue, like just small pockets changing depending on what town or village you're in, with like the urban centers obviously being more cohesive. But then you go out in the middle of bumfuck nowhere, whether it's California or Texas, and it's whichever militia decides to implement the rules for that particular area.
Which I should point out that, like, if you go to the middle of bumfuck nowhere in California, it is deeply conservative.
It's not just that. It's that if you live in the United States, you know that the government of the states themselves are not particularly strong, right? Meaning, like, the provision of goods, right? Like, the local loyalty to the idea of Louisiana or Indiana or even, I would argue, New York, right, is highly, highly tentative.
Yes.
Yeah.
And those things just wouldn't survive. It's certainly not their geographic borders, and I would argue much less their actual, like, state structure, right? Like, a lot of those things would dissolve kind of overnight. They're barely held together now.
I mean, that's the annoying thing with all of these, like, counterfactuals and hypotheticals about a civil war is that, like, it would be, like I said, Syria. It would be, like the only another good, I mean, there were good parts in Civil War. The other good part in that movie was when they run across like these two snipers in the field with another sniper in the house, and like the fucking idiot journalist, fucking Wagner Moura, is like, "What side are you on?" And the guy looks at him, and like, my friend, I was watching with my friend in the theater, and he turned around and told me, like he was just voicing what these guys are thinking, like, "What the fuck are you talking about?
What are you talking about?"
He's shooting us, we're shooting him, one of us is gonna die here, and we're gonna make sure it's not us. It's that simple. There's no like Democrats, Republican, whatever. It's guy in house shoots guy in village shoots guy in town. It's that simple.
Yeah. By the way, those guys, I think from what I recall, did not have insignia on. There was a lot
they
of
had,
like
fatigues war, on, but that was about it.
Of all the little vignettes, by the way, I really, really enjoyed the redneck having the guy just strung up in the car wash. I thought that was actually
that would be
very
more like it. It would be more scenes like that. Yes. Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. If there are two things, we can go all back and forth all day about counterfactuals, and there are two things that are absolutely certain if a civil war broke out in America. One, I'm killing myself. Two is that the shittiest guy you know in high school who now owns a vape shop is somehow high up in his like local militia.
Yeah, you know, he becomes warlord. The people who became warlords in like Syria and Afghanistan are either former like officers of former regimes, like that were in the case of Syria, it was like former Iraqi guys who like were part of the Saddam government who crossed the border and became high up, like Abu Zulqawi, etc. Or like in Afghanistan's case, like local village losers who like are the worst guy you know from gym class. Like fucking Hikmet Yar was like the guy who went to college to throw acid in the face of women.
Yeah, because, just a freak. Just like an incel freak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both guys, like the American equivalent of that would be like fucking Dylan Roof becoming like head of the you know, the militias.
So it's a good segue, Amr, because we've talked about guys on our podcast already several times. Guys like the ones depicted in the film Warfare, right, that are stone cold, honest to God, convinced that they will be the new warlords in the coming post-Civil War America, which they insist over and over again. They don't want that to happen, but they talk about it all the time. Right. And this is, by the way, one of the reasons I'll just straight up say I enjoyed Warfare. I like it. And I'll tell you why in the next, I don't know, however long this, you know, insert timestamp here. Right. Partially because I like a film about the real version of those guys in an absolute fiasco of a mission, a thing that goes south so quickly in so many different fucked up and stupid ways. And that shows openly that these guys are macho bros, like doing push-ups on a mission, but mostly sitting around in a kitchen while they take an Iraqi family hostage. Like, they're supreme assholes. And by the way, who, like anybody, also collapse under pressure as the mission goes awry. That's what the movie is to me. And and I thoroughly enjoyed that. And we'll talk about there are so many moments of really dark comedy that I found hilarious.
I do want to say up top, we're going to get into it. If you have not seen Warfare, you know, spoiler warning, right? Like, skip this episode if you haven't seen it and want to go see it. A24 just announced a 4K UHD Blu-ray pre-order, so you can pre-order the movie if you want. We don't get any money off of that. But I also want to say that if you go see the movie, it can be very, very triggering, especially if you are a strong advocate of the Third Amendment, because boy howdy, these soldiers
thou
are good.
Thou shalt not quarter troops in thy household. It is the commandment delivered by God to the founding fathers.
Yeah, just a bunch of 3A guys white knuckling it in the theater, like, oh my God.
By the way, make a note of that, because it's something that asshole reviewer literally mentions in his video, is like, well, this couldn't happen here because we have the Third Amendment. And it's like, it's a war, you dumb fuck. Nobody cares, man. Have you not gotten the fucking memo?
Go back to, I think it was Pompey Magnus who quoted that during the riots in Rome. Do not quote laws to men with swords.
Yeah.
Like, you try quoting laws to a fucking lunatic with an M15 or whatever it is, an M6 or whatever the fucking weapon they use is.
By the way, I don't know if you've noticed, Amr, but a lot of that's been happening recently in the United States, where it's like, this is against the law, sir. And it's like, well, you're in a van now, so I don't, deal with it, right? Maybe a judge will stop me from sending you to El Salvador.
Dang, you should call your lawyer. Too bad you don't have a fucking phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Your phone's in this bag. Or your phone's
actually
in the other
car. You
could
talk to your lawyer. We throw him in the same cell as you. Enjoy.
So anyway, Armor, my plan was to go through a quick plot, but we don't really have to do that.
There was
we
a plot.
Just jump in.
Oh, come on.
So maybe it won't get cut out. I was going to go over a plot synopsis, but as Armor has pointed out, there isn't a conventional plot. There are a series of events that occur.
It is,
right?
It is a real-time portrayal of a 90-minute mission that went awry.
And there are some cuts, right? They break in at night and then it's the morning, right? But like the series of scenes that make up the bulk of the film are in real time. And this was like a selling point, by the way, which is astounding because it shows you how quickly this shit all went down south. Incredibly fucking
everything
quickly
went wrong. Everything that could go wrong went wrong in this mission.
So the film kicks off, and this is going to be something that I come back to.
It's based on a true story.
It's based on a true story. That by the way, I did not know until much later. I was like, why did they pick this? Right, because it's clear from I think stuff that the production firm has said. I thought this was actually Amr. I mean, forgive my naivete. I thought this was an anti-war film in that. They picked this because it's such a hellish like experience and like tale. It makes everybody involved look awful, right? And I'm like, why would they do this if it's not to make a point about how, you know, maybe it's an allegory for the entire war. The house is an allegory for Iraq in general. But no, the reason that this was chosen is because this is a mission that Ray Mendoza, director and producer, was literally a part of. One of the guys in the show, they may be the focal point, a guy named Ray, right? He's kind of our focal point. We kind of see a bunch of scenes happen basically.
He's the radio guy on the film.
He's the radio guy. Yeah. The one who turns off his comms. He gets caught in the explosion that happens about midway through the film. That is Ray Mendoza. And this is Ray Mendoza's big war story from when he was a legit Navy SEAL. Mm-hmm. And you go like, oh, fuck, this is like the most harrowing story that you can tell, right? And you think that this showcases what kind of American warfare is from a standpoint of realism and, you know, grisly gore, which it is. But you tell me, Amr, is this a snide commentary about American warfare, or is it just a real story that's so comic that it makes everybody look like shit?
If we're going to do a plot summary, the plot summary is very simple. It's the mission in the Second Battle of Ramadi in 2006. Yes. The enemy are Abu Musab's Darfawi's guys, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, essentially.
Not that you would know that from the film.
Yeah, they don't clarify, which I was, because I took two of my friends to the movie, and they're not as historically pedantic and nerdy as we are. They're not, you know, they have good lives going on. So they thought it was the beginning of the war. I was like, no, it's 2006. So I had to clarify to them that there were several enemies the Americans were fighting at the same time in Iraq. There was the Sunni militants, most notably Al-Qaeda in Iraq, led by Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. And then there was the Shia uprising in the south, the Badr brigades under Muqtada al-Sadr. And both were fighting insurgencies against the Americans. So this in Ramadi was part of what the Americans, like, I mean, I hate this term, but this is what the Americans call it, the Sunni Triangle in the middle of the country. And Ramadi was supposed to be the scene of this, like, heavy fighting, and this mission was supposed to be like a fucking bad mission that went south, and the Al-Qaeda guys had them surrounded and so forth. That's the plot. And the plot is like this one mission in this one house, like Alex said, and they get attacked by Al-Qaeda guys. And it's like very like, it's good and bad that it shows you how messy the attack is. Like, you never know where the bullets are coming from. You never know where, like it's just, everyone's shooting everywhere. Now, to answer your question, Alec, whether this is like an anti-war movie that shows that war sucks or a pro-war movie, everything conveyed in the fucking interminable hours, it's completely nullified by the 2 minutes at the end where they show you the behind the scenes, where they bring in the real, like the real SEALs, and they make them waddle around set like fucking, you know, like basically they're guests of honor, essentially. And they're like, hey, look, Coco Jarvis, he's playing you. Isn't that cool? And they take pictures with each other. And like everything before that is completely nullified by that scene, in my opinion, because what that scene does is like, hey, it looks like it sucks. It felt like it sucked, but if you survive it, you'll get to go wander around the Hollywood TV or a movie studio, and you get to meet the actors playing you and making you look cool. Is it snake eating its own fucking tail?
You get to contribute to a Hollywood production about your pain and suffering, right? That you've now converted through, I guess, the market into being like, you know, part of the silver screen, right? Etched into movie history now. In what's being marketed as the most realistic depiction of war since, you know, insert a documentary here.
And that's okay. Yeah, if you want realistic adaptations of warfare, that's fine. Realism shouldn't be the main sell of a fucking movie in the first place. Like, we go to a movie for a reason. Like, I could watch live leak videos of ISIS beheadings if that's I wanted. I think the thing that annoyed me was that even if you want to do realistic movies, like a movie's supposed to have a beat, a narrative, some through line through which you could be like, these are the characters, these are what they're like, you don't even have to go like deeply to the background, these are what their personalities are like. And this is what, like, throughout the movie, think like they encounter things and react to things, and then either they change or they don't change as people. But like, the comparison I'll make is to one of the better war movies. I was gonna make it to Band of Brothers, but it's not fair because that's a 10 episode TV show. Fine, let's make it to another movie, Saving Private Ryan. Right, every soldier in that squad was memorable. You know, you had like Barzo, you had Ryman, you had fucking Uppen, you had Horvat. Like, these were guys who you could distinguish them from one another. And throughout the movie, they change in certain ways. There are seminal scenes where like they react to the pressure and the stress. Gun to my head, I swear to God, I cannot, besides Ray, I can't tell you any of the names of these people.
Yes.
I mean, so, just like John Blackthorne has a sniper now, the shameless alcoholic dad's son is like the captain for some reason.
I can remember Elliot because they kept shouting his guy, name over and over.
Elliot is the guy who, by the way, on the poster, looks like the disgraced streamer Dr. Disrespect because of his stupid wraparound sunglasses and mustache. I like literally could not get it out of my head. But you're right. Even during the film, I'm like, wait, is that guy or is that the other guy?
Yeah.
And like, true form, they're just a bunch of jarheads. They're like indistinguishable from one another, which is so funny because I think Amr, like later you're going to talk about like where these kinds of guys are now, but they're still like an indistinguishable blob. They're still like a mass, right? That particular thing has not changed about them.
The only thing because Elliot was an easy character to remember, one, because they kept saying his name over and over, and two, he would be screaming throughout the entire movie, and the translators that they hired, Farid and Noor, would turn and be like, the engine is in pain.
Anjin.
The engine.
Yeah.
So let's get back to the plot real quick. So as Amr's described, right, a thing I appreciate about it, and I'll talk about it later, is that like there is no narrative convention. There's no schmaltz. There's no setup. There's no like here we're in the we're in the briefing room and we're going to talk about what the mission is. There's no 5-minute introduction to even like a couple guys on the base. We're in like a classic movie, Amr, like where they like call their wife, right? And like talk to their kid on like the webcam, right? As like many, especially like Iraq war films will like show you, right? So like,
there was the one scene with the fucking, again, completely dislocating scene of like the, when they're watching the music video. And like,
yes. It starts with Call on Me, which is a music video, by the way, in a bizarre... Connor, you want
to Honor is raising his finger like he's about to do the Shahada and join.
there is only one God.
One day, Amr. One day. You're going to have to wake up pretty early in the morning to get me to take the Shahada. But as for that opening scene, like what you were talking about, Alec, how normally these movies would open up with a scene of them calling their wife, learning the mission, giving these characters some stakes, giving the narrative some stakes. Instead, you're having them watch this music video and they're dancing and like hooting and hollering at women's bodies just because, as I read it, like, just so you know, these are boys. Like, they're dressed up like army men, but these are like boys. And again, this movie does not spoon feed you anything. So I have to acknowledge that this is my interpretation. I could easily see, and Amr, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but I could easily see someone coming out of that movie and just being like, wow, war is badass. I can't wait to do this.
I don't think so, but we'll talk about it later. Like in a weird, Connor, like to my literal life parallel, when I was in college, this was a couple years after, right? Because I graduated high school in 2008. Call on Me was literally a thing that we did to get pumped up to go to frat parties. I shit you not. This exact video, if you ask any of like, remember the guys from my fucking bachelor party? If you ask any of them about Call on Me, they know this video, right? Because we did this thing. We are not Navy SEALs about to, you know, do a home invasion and then get shot at and blown up by an IED. But this has like particular resonance with me as like a, you know, hopefully an ex. I'm an ex young guy, but I'm hopefully an ex, you know, dumb guy as well.
Yeah, except like, instead of going to a frat party to try and get pussy, they're going into an Iraqi family's home, herding them into the basement somewhere, and then like just aside from the attack that happened, like even if the attack didn't happen in this movie, like the capitalizing effect, by the way, is like they're in the house and they get attacked by and it's supposed to be like a state of siege. But even if that attack didn't happen, like nothing they were doing was morally even like remotely understandable. Like you're in this fucking family's house. They wanted to leave. They're all herded to the fucking bedroom, which, by the way, like this passing of time, like it shows you the passing of time as like the mission continues. But like this family has been in that bedroom for like 12, 13, 14 hours, just by in the same room.
A different version of this movie that would be fascinating is just that room, right? Like them talking amongst themselves. The movie literally for a while just forgets they're in there and just doesn't show you them. But again, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it a little bit. Like, so we transition, we smash cut literally from the Call on Me scene with the guys like hooting and hollering over like,
pigs,
80s style, like babes to them. With like night vision on, walking through a Ramadi suburb as they pick a house seemingly at random, right? It's kind of implied to like overlook this market where they're on their sniper mission. They're the detail for a sniper team, and the guy just points at a house, right, and says, "I like this one," and that's all that happens. That's the only decision that's made that ruins like this family in particular's like life, possibly, right? Which is like, it's so shocking and like just like off the cuff, right? I don't know, it's interesting for that reason. So they literally sneak into these people's houses and then discover that the house has been separated into a duplex, right, with like an upstairs apartment. There's an internal staircase that's blocked off with cinder blocks. And in the first, like, to me, in the first sign that these are like absolute morons, they're still under cover of darkness, right? Nobody knows they're there. Instead of figuring out how somebody would go to that upper apartment and just going it that way. There's got to be an outside staircase or something, right? They've got to get to their apartment somehow. They choose to get a sledgehammer out and beat down the cinder block wall, which is apparently a real thing that happened on this mission, right? So they do this home invasion, and like you said, right, they like accost these people in their beds and wake them up and herd them into a room downstairs. And at that point, we basically cut to the next day and the long kind of arduous scene of the sniper team, right? This is Mr. Elliot, right? Mr. Dr. Disrespect, looking through a hole that they've cut in the wall at what appears to be basically the outside of a normal market in Ramadi, as he like points a sniper scope at basically every civilian that walks by. He like trains it on their head.
Yeah. Absolutely. And he does this thing where like at one point, like he sees like a guy go into like a building with a phone, like we're talking on the phone. He's like, don't get your jihad on. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I kind of like this actor, to be fair. I kind of really enjoyed Shogun. I thought he was awesome in that. But like, none of these people are appealing. And like, okay, to the point about I made earlier about Saving Private Ryan, maybe you can't make a movie like that about the Iraq War, because the fundamental conceit about something like Saving Private Ryan, or any of the movies about the Vietnam War for that matter, is that these are all conscript armies. So the movies can be about different types of Americans who are conscripted and find camaraderie in their like sort of, you know, the family they're thrown into, which is, you know, their units, et cetera, their platoons and so forth. The problem with the Iraq War, when you make a movie about the Iraq War, is that you're talking about a fucking professional employed army, like an army where people enlist. So there can never be different types of characters like there is with Band of Brothers or The Pacific or fucking even like the different type of psycho but interesting movies you see like in Full Metal Jacket, for example, right? Mm. Like you can't have that without conscription, because you'll only have specific type of people who join the army. And if this isn't even the fucking army, this is the goddamn SEAL team. So it's like, what if we made a movie about the Waffen SS?
Yes. This is, by the way, maybe that film. I mean, these are the kinds of guys that Connor and I possibly remember from high school. I mean, Connor knows some very personally, right? But these are the kinds of guys that, you know, as an outcome of 9/11, basically, right, were like, I would like to join the army. And some will like admit it explicitly, but I know them, right? I know so many of these people. They wanted to go over there and murder people, right? Yeah. They wanted to kill people. They wanted to fuck their countries up as recompense for this thing that happened to us.
Yep.
That is who got filtered into the squad that you see before you, right?
A really great media portrayal of those kinds of people is Generation Kill, either the book or the TV show.
And in there, they're pretty naked about that, right? Yeah. And everybody that wants to know knows, right? And these are the most crazy psycho of those guys, right? The guys that got to be Navy SEALs in, you know, by 2006, right? Ooh. 5 years after 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with this movie for me, is that, like, I don't find that type of character interesting to make a film about. A, because I know they exist in real life, and I've also met enough of them. By the way, some of our teachers back home in Bahrain were very interesting people. I had a Fallujah veteran teacher, very alcoholic. Like, you could see he's drinking. The only thing keeping him from throttling the Arab boys he's supposed to teach is vodka and coke. So, yeah.
Yikes.
Just smelled like shit all the time, et cetera, and so forth.
That's not every vet I know, but it's quite a few of them.
Yeah, and he was there to make money, because they paid a lot of money for Americans to in the Gulf. But like the thing I go back to is like in other types of war movies, it's not whether a movie is pro war or anti war. Is does it have an interesting story to tell, or a narrative, or some kind of thing that it's offering as a work of art? This doesn't. This. I swear to God, Call of Duty cutscenes had more narration than this.
You are right. You are definitely right about that. I will give you that.
I felt more kinship with certain Call of Duty game-like characters than I would with anything these people are doing.
They're actually grotesque.
Did you not stick around for the post-credit scene when Soap shows up?
Like, they're actually grotesque, right? Like just by the way, back to the plot, like while the sniping scene is going on, we cut to the boys that are just hanging out inside the house, right? Yeah. They're the detail that's escorting the sniper team, essentially. And they're like, one guy, right, this macho guy, Sam, right, is like doing push-ups. One guy's like spitting in the other dude's water and handing it to them. They're being mean to each other, right? Like, they're just gross. They're just gross guys. They're just assholes. And this is all like, by the way, like this what would pass for like character development, or you think might develop into character development, is kind of immediately cut short by the fact that somebody, I assume, right, must have identified, right? Like they're looking down at this this market in Ramadi, and there's guys that might be looking at the house and pointing at it. And our sniper guy, by the way, is not quick enough to shoot any of them, which is, is implied heavily
it's
that that would be.
It's a second sniper guy. So the original sniper guy goes to take a piss or whatever. And there's like
get some
his
dip. He runs out of dip, which is the reason why a random Iraqi does not get shot, right? and they're found out. Right. Whether it was like them sledgehammering the wall the prior day, or I will point out the other guys that are literally standing in open windows on the second floor of this house. They've been found out and somebody throws or drops a grenade through their little sniper peephole. And this injures our sniper. Right. This is the first casualty. So Elliot, Dr. Disrespect, right, is lightly injured.
Yeah. He's just slightly injured. He cut his arm and everyone's just kind of like dazed and disoriented.
The frag doesn't do a lot of damage. No. Right? What happens after is the real climax or turning point is when they try to extract him because they got a fucking paper cut from a grenade or whatever it was.
I like to point out that before this, right, there are, and we'll go back to like the comedy of it, but like there's an extended scene where they get him, they're starting to patch him up and kind of like pat him down, and then there's a new guy on the squad, right, and the new guy and another guy are tasked with getting his backpack out of the room that he's just been like dragged out of. This guy is sprays like an automatic, like an M249 machine gun through a window that just has a blind through it. He can't see outside, and he just sprays, I don't know, 100 rounds through this window, right, to get a backpack back. Nobody can see him in the room. He can't see anybody outside, right? And the comedy of that scene is great. So then they all march downstairs.
Well, it's just like that's the beginning of
the fiasco.
You see this one character who I thought was Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, but it's this guy, Kit Connor, who I think he does a good job.
He plays Tommy. He's like the baby faced like newbie.
Yeah. But he if you look at this guy and you think like, oh, a crack in his little facade is showing, just wait, because he is just like a sign of what is to come.
And by the way, like, again, like to showcase, right, like the ineptitude, it's not like anybody in the squad points out that he shouldn't just be spraying like machine gun fire like blindly into a civilian area. Right. Nobody says that. One, you're wasting bullets. Two, you're confirming that we're in here and alive. Right. Three, who the fuck knows what you're shooting at, dude? Just stop.
Yeah, I mean, none of those points are relevant for the steel psychos who are making this movie.
So they call for a Bradley fighting vehicle to show up. There's some like chatter over the radio, and you cut to this kind of like overhead thermal camera, which the film uses. It's one of the only annoying things to me about the film, is like the overhead thermal camera. They all line up downstairs to escort their sniper right to this Bradley, and then they're gonna go back into the house. Their position, which is now confirmed to be known to an unknown enemy that they don't even know where they are, they're going to stay in this house.
They don't know where they are. They don't know what their numbers are. They don't know what their capabilities are. They don't know if they have mortars or anything. They're just like, we're just going to go back and stay in the same house with the same family that we're going to like hold hostage. Which, by the way, human shields, hello,
yes,
human shields, hello.
Yeah, we got to talk about this.
So watching them just like take over that Iraqi family's house was just like, Jesus, that's crazy. And watching them send out the translators as human shields and then waiting to see, like, are they going to get shot? That was the first moment in this movie I was like, this is disgusting behavior. This is
depraved.
There's two.
They present it as like a matter of fact, like, which, like, okay, again, there's an argument to be made about, like, you know, whether you want to see how it quote unquote really happened, but like none of the things they're doing, no one is like, maybe we shouldn't do this, maybe we shouldn't be here, why are we here, what is going on? No, it's just like they do it, and then of course the Bradley gets hit with an IED, and of course, like, two of their fucking moron Cosmo Jarvis and some other guy, I don't even remember who the other guy that gets wiped out is. I just was like, one of these guys,
Joseph Quinn, Sam, he's a leading petty officer.
Sure.
I've got the Wikipedia pulled up.
they announce to their two Iraqi army attachments, right? One of whom is a translator, the other guy, I think it's kind of unclear. It doesn't really matter. That they are going to take point or whatever and go open the gates, right? So the other bros can escort the guy through the gate to the Bradley. And so these, like, Iraqi guys discuss amongst themselves and are like, holy fuck, they're going to send us out there. We're going to get fucking shot, bro. But they do it. And then, they all walk out to the Bradley and this fucking IED goes off. I thought they got hit with, like, an RPG at first.
I wasn't sure.
Not clear. Yeah. And so now we get into, like, this, I thought was actually pretty well done from, like, a sound standpoint.
It seems to be unilaterally this movie is getting praised for sound design.
The sound design is great. It really is very jarring when the bullets, like, crack and all that. But wait,
a movie getting praise only for sound design is like if I went to a restaurant and said they had a nice bathroom. Like,
I don't think that
the menu looked great.
The pictures look good.
The font size was wonderful.
Very legible menus.
Yeah.
I gotta insist, like, another thing that's so funny is they throw a smoke grenade out, but it, like, bounces off the wall. It doesn't go far at all. So they just end up smoking up the entrance to the house. So they go out totally blind. they're literally totally blind going to, like, towards
the house. These are supposed to be, like, the elite American units. Like, these are
It's such a fucking embarrassment, man. So there's a quick sequence where, like, Ray, we're kind of in his standpoint, and he kind of wakes up. There's ash, there's smoke everywhere as this, like, explosion has just gone off, right? And he's deafened, which I thought was very real. I've shot a lot of guns without hearing protection, and, like, that the kind of muffledness of everything, and, like, the kind of whine, and just like you like take out all the high decibel stuff, and all you can hear is, like, thumps and stuff. That was pretty neat. But you cut to insane gore, right? And this is the first time in the movie, right, where, like, the brutality of the gore is just announced, right? And the first thing you see, by the way, is one of the Iraqis, I believe it's the kind of unnamed, you know, question mark translator guy, who has been blown apart. It's just his torso with his, like, guts hanging out. It's very painful to see, right? And it elicited literal, like, gasps in the theater that I was in.
I must admit that the Iraqi aside, when the bomb hit and the gore came out of the Americans, I was like, my friend had to grab me from cheering.
It's a couple different guys
sucks
wake
to suck,
up.
Buddy, count the fucking rings. Sucks to suck. Count the rings.
A couple of the boys wake up, and one of them discovers, right, Sam, the guy that had been doing push-ups the entire time, and, like, by the way, like, peeking through the blinds with his, like, rifle barrel and shit, right? Just, like, possibly.
I guarantee you they all sat around the table and thought that, like, the thing he was doing with the barrel was cool.
Super,
like,
cool.
Would it be so cool if instead of, like, using my hands to remove the fucking blinds, I would use the end of my M16 equivalent I have? It would be so sick, bro. It would be so fucking sick, bro. These people suck, man. And so, we'll get to the end with where they are now. Sort of,
well,
you know.
He sucks, but his legs are blown apart. His legs are, he is fucked up, right? And fun. Elliot is our Dr. Disrespect, right? Mr. I got my hand hurts. He is also extremely fucked up. Their legs are all fucked up, and it's really gross. So there's an extended sequence because everybody's basically scattered where Ray does basically the only quote unquote heroic thing in the movie. you know, and like drags these guys back kind of sloppily to the house. And there's just blood everywhere and everybody. And this begins the sequences of screaming, right, that have
yes.
so desperately affected the viewing public. Right. Because as you say, right, like I think a lot of the kinds of guys that comment on this movie, the kinds of guys that would be excited about the realism, right, as like we've been saying, are really not guys that watch a lot of Live Leak videos. They're not guys that are particularly in tune with what happens when people get shot and blown up. And they got really, really freaked out when the screaming started. And by the way, the screaming will continue for essentially the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I think we get like 5 to 10 minutes of silence. And most of that is like wrap up credit montage kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'll just run it down real quick. They drag all the guys back in the house. There's some hijinks as they try to address the wounded. Everybody at this point is shell-shocked and freaking the fuck out. And they have to basically wait for their sister squad to, for a little action sequence, come up the road to come get them.
And when they do arrive, it is so clear that they are on two completely different levels. Because like the sister squad arrives and people are just like, hell yeah, let's do this.
That was such a discombobulating scene where like that one guy was like, yeah, bro, yeah, don't be a pussy, bro. And the guy's like legs are completely shattered. Yeah,
and he accidentally kicks his steps on, leg people keep stepping on him over and over.
Yeah, I like the comedy. So like That's basically, and we'll maybe, you know, we'll address some smaller plot points, right? Maybe later, but like we got to go into the comedy, right? I've already talked about
sound design. That scene deserved a Benny Hill theme.
Oh,
all the humor comes from fucking up. It reminded me of the Venture Brothers, and that like it's just like the plan goes horribly wrong comedically, and I think I laughed out loud only once in my theater that was very, very quiet. And I think maybe people were upset with me, but Michael Gandolfini, there is a scene where he has to administer morphine to one of the injured characters, and he fucks up and he has the injector, which looks like an EpiPen, but he has it upside down, and he injects himself with a full syringe of morphine, and everyone's like, are you good? You have to be good. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, let me do this again. And
it's one of those are you fucking serious moments, right?
Yeah.
These are Navy SEALs. These are fucking
laughing, and my hands went onto my head, because I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Because it's so intense. It does not happen, and like, there's no lull in this movie once the action kicks off. And I think they do a good high stakes tension.
They do a good job setting up the tension for this never-ending scene of agony and absolute incompetence.
It is 90 minutes of bunching up like in stress, unless you're Armor and you're high-fiving everyone in the theater.
Oh, it was awesome, man. I was like just doing the flipping the screen off, being like suck it, doing the triple H suck it thing.
That's why I think this movie is good, because it's so funny, man.
I just imagine Armor with like a vuvuzela or an air horn. It's like,
listen, sucks to suck, man. It's like, you know, sometimes you do well in away games. Sometimes the home side just trounces you. And in this case, the home side was just better in the day. The crowd got behind them. They got a momentum going.
I have to say, Connor, Connor knows that I laugh sometimes inappropriately, and this was just a barrel of laughs, and there were like probably 4 or 5 other people in the movie theater. By the way, some of the bros, I got like I recorded a little snippet of what they thought, and they were like legit shell-shocked walking. There was like a group of like 320 something dudes with beards, right, like Rogan listener looking gentlemen, right? And they were like shell shocked. I know that's the target audience. And they were like, it was a really rough watch, man. It was way more brutal than I thought it was going to be, which is so funny.
Is it the closer? This is the closest they're going to get to a Lars von Trier film.
I mean, the thing where they keep stepping on the guy's leg as like the amped up bros like show up and like come into the house like it's a fucking frat party, and they just keep stepping on him. It's fucking wild, man. And Amr, like, I know, I mean, I guess it's becoming clear that, like, the thing that I'm enjoying about the film is, like, how grotesque it is. I think unintentionally.
I agree it's grotesque. I didn't enjoy it because it didn't say anything that I didn't know already. And then, to your point, you mentioned Joe Rogan, so I feel like it's a suitable place to mention now. Like, the entire time I'm watching this movie, and in the back of my head, in the meta-narrative, that all of these people, like, this was in 2006 Ramadi, so, like, all of these people are 10 years away from selling you not woke coffee. And they're like, you have to get those supplements, yeah. Starbucks is gay, you know, we have to sell you coffee that doesn't turn you into a homosexual. You know, fucking, he take these supplements. Like, all of these guys, the supposed, like, the seal, like, the elite of the elite, right? They're all Rogan guys now. They're all guys who have their own fucking supplements to sell and their own shows to watch, podcasts, clothing lines, whatever it is. And I can't help but watching that movie and, like, watching these people and being like, everyone that survives is done more damage to the American psyche than even whatever they've done to Iraq. Like they just, it's the first this tragedy then as farce of, like, you know, the Freikorps, right? The German Freikorps, right? Like, traumatized war veteran coming back home and then, like, forming, like, these, the Freikorps and, like, street fighting with communists or whatever. Like, that's the tragedy, right? The farce of it is, you know, shell-shocked Americans coming back and being like, what if we all sell you dick pills that aren't dick pills? it's a joke. It's a fucking joke. Like, and what other elite units, like, do that? But they, like, only in America is the dream to, like, become essentially your own jet ski dealer.
Yeah, like, and that's what happened. And I'll tell you, the reality is so much sadder, right? Because there's only so much room for the Navy SEAL, like, Black Rifle Coffee guys. These guys, probably like some of the vets that I know, are basically the coolest alcoholic at their bar, right? They're people that we talked about in episodes past where it's like the guy who can't figure out why none of his relationships work, right? The guy who, by the way, refuses to go to therapy because it's gay,
or like, oh, people had it way worse than I do. I don't deserve this therapy. And Alec, as you and I talked about earlier this week, like, how many people have said that and then, you know, ended their own life? Like, it's really depressing.
Yeah, and shot themselves or their family or something, right? And like the best case scenario, Amr, for these guys really is like coffee salesmen, and the average is,
or motivational speaker like Jocko.
The other part is, like, they'll, like, become guys who do podcasts about how, you know, you have to treat every day like it's Ramadi. You have to wake up every day like it's 5 a.m. and do a run, whatever.
But those guys are the most insane car salesmen, right, at the, like, local Chevy dealership. For real. Like, that's where a lot of these guys end up, SEAL or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't know how to take no for an answer, funnily enough.
Yeah.
And it applies throughout every aspect of their life, not taking no for an answer.
I would love to have a candid conversation with a type like that, Alec, because we know people like this, but it is interesting. So what exactly happened overseas that prepared you for car sales? Like, what are you taking from this military action that makes you like, I'm going to put you in this fucking Kia today? Like, what is
it's a complete abrogation of consent. If you think about it, it's, you know,
and also the fact that troop fuckers exist, right? The kinds of guys that listen to Rogan want to be around this guy more than anything, right? I mean, more than anything, they would like to be them. But the second best is to be around them. So if you know a guy who's a Navy SEAL, your job, if you work at the car dealership, is to get his ass to work there, because that would be a cool guy to have around the office. That's until, true. You know, you have to fire him for drinking on the job.
You know, the various, the myriad well-documented stats of, like, sex crimes as done by operator types aside, like, even the very basic premise of, like, we're going to take over your house now, right? Like, it's not a big leap to go from, like, not recognizing the consent of Iraqi villagers to being like, no, I'm going to put you in this Chevy, whether you like it or not.
You're going to buy this
Chevy, whether you like it or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
You are going to do this. So we got to talk about the Iraqis in the film. So the family is treated.
What a home team performance. What a home team performance. They hustled hard. Their third bench got in there. Every squad player knew his role. Great, great tactical performance. That's playoff hockey right there, pal. Let's see playoff hockey right there.
Well, like I've said, like the family is literally like forgotten about for a large portion of the film.
Right.
And when the film remembers they're there, they're almost annoyed, right?
Yeah.
The
one scene where they have to like cover the family because they were doing one of the more annoying things in the movie, which is show of force.
They kept
saying show of force and show of force, and I'm like, the only force you should be shown is like the at the end of a bayonet, you stupid Yankee pigs. But anyways, aside from that, they kept doing this thing where like show of force meant an F-16 would like fly very low and like scare. I assume it means scare the fucking people, but like. There was one scene where they did it and they all went to protect the family or whatever, like the Iraqi family. And I'm like, if anything, that movie did not happen, it was that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's so kind of incommensurate with the rest of like the way the film treats it. You know, it's almost like insulting. And so like they use the translators, like the Iraqi attachment as human shields. By the way, the translator guy who's not killed in the blast and doesn't seem to be hurt, right, just absolutely goes AWOL and the film never mentions him again.
Yeah. Right?
He's just gone. And nobody seems to even like notice that he's gone. There was a specific moment, Amr, like talking about like the kind of grotesqueness with which it treats these people. I think I noticed that during some scenes they didn't even bother translating what the Iraqis were saying. Like there's a scene where like the dad stands up, right? He's like this father figure or whatever, right? They're in this thing and he just starts yelling, right? He's just like, I don't know what he's saying, right? Get the fuck out of my house or whatever. They don't even bother telling you what he's saying. Right.
Well, lucky for you, I speak Arabic and I watched that movie so I could understand what he was saying. And it was basically like, what are you doing here? Just leave. What are you doing here? And then the lady starts saying, ya haywanat, which is you animals. And I'm like, that's what I genuinely screamed in the fucking theater. I was like dying of laughter. But it turns out after the movie that the two guys behind me to my right were also Arab and they were watching the movie. They were Saudi. And we ended up talking after the movie like, very quickly because I had to leave. But they're like, yeah, all of these Americans are swine. They don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, respect. When the Saudis are like calling you swine.
Even the Saudis are like disgusting pigs.
Yeah. But yeah, the guy was like, leave, you have to leave, etc. You're going to kill us all. Various things of that nature. The funny thing about that is that there is a way in which you could artistically make a movie where like, the mistranslation or the lack of translation, right? There's no translation whatsoever. And it like, it's supposed to convey a thematic purpose of like disorientation in a foreign land. And like a better director, if someone was really willing to interrogate what the Iraq war was, would do exactly like you said, like the house is the metaphor for Iraq, like the misunderstanding, the complete confusion. And like, there would be a narrative through line where at the end, the audience can most of the audience at least can satisfactorily go out and be like, yeah, that Iraq was a nightmare and we shouldn't have been there. And everyone who participated was either at the very least complicit in war crimes. And like some level of guilt or reflection or growth or whatever it is. Instead, it's just like these Iraqi guys are yelling at them and they're like, Will Poulter is like, I don't know what you're saying. Back away.
Get the fuck away from me. Shut up. And get the fuck away. Like, I mean, these guys are annoyed that they can't just kill them. Right.
Yeah.
It definitely you get that vibe. Like, and then as the film ends, right, because they lie, basically somebody pretends to be their commanding officer. And the military's tentative to allow them another evac, given that one of their Bradleys was just fucking exploded on, right? And they took fire. So they have to lie, basically, to even get evacuated, like, by the higher-ups. And so two more Bradleys show up, and they eventually, right, like, get the wounded bros out, right? And then the film ends as they all leave in a third set of Bradleys and just autocannon shoot up the building that they were in. Under the false premise that there are guys on their roof, which is a thing that they keep just repeating over and over with no evidence. None.
Yeah.
They just ruined this house. The whole neighborhood is just fucked up now.
That house in particular, I mean, the streets are full of corpses, but that house in particular is destroyed. So they occupy this house, or just like no one's on the second story, whatever, just fucking blow it up. And the second to last shot of the movie, which was my favorite shot of the movie, yeah, is the Iraqi family coming out to survey the damage. And just like the last two shots of the film before they go into the, like, here with the real people, are the family coming out to see, holy shit, our house is not only destroyed, but it's covered in blood and guts and gore. And like, this is the legacy that these American soldiers are leaving us. And then the last scene is, you know, insurgent forces coming out into the street and just seeing like, did we win? Did we lose? What, like, there's no celebration. They just like come out into the street and they're just kind of like looking around. And it's
basically, right, a bunch of like Al-Qaeda and Iraq guys literally coming out of all the adjacent buildings to the house that the Americans have now left, and just standing around and looking at the body of the Iraqi translator, right, yeah, of the attaché. And I got to say, right, by the way, I mean, another extremely dark moment of comedy, but this is, I'm going to tell you anyway. Every time they cut to the outside of the house after the IED attack and you just see the prop that is like the severed leg of the guy, I laughed, man. It's so like brutally kind of comic as it just like lays there.
I disagree. Right? I don't know if I would put that in the Venn diagram of like, Alec has a twisted sense of humor, and like this was crazy. I think
I'm just
like,
telling you,
you laughed at a... You basically laughed at a funeral.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's so, I don't know. It's like such a good metaphor of like the quiet of the street and just like this fucking carnage. And the fact that it's inserted in there, I don't know if I'm supposed to laugh or not. So, you know, that's just my reaction. I might cut that if that's too freaky, but it's a thing that happened.
No, I mean, it's you, man.
It's grotesque. I mean, this entire film is grotesque. Right. And that's, to be honest, right, I'm going to go now into like why kind of I praise it as this like really unintentionally grotesque, horrible image of like, you know, of America and Americans and of the Iraq War, but really not specifically. Right. There's the idea of like the no schmaltz. Right. There's no music. There's no introduction to these guys. By the way, when they leave the film, you know, that all these guys walk out and just look, right, all these Iraqi insurgents. And then the film just ends. Right. And you go to the thank you for your service. Right. Like clap montage where they show you, you know, quote unquote, the real operators. Right. Who were in this squad, and a bunch of their faces are just like grayed out.
The Joseph Goebbels film production company, yeah, A24, has done it again.
I mean, I respect Amr the fact that they don't try, like, for once in a film, they present these guys as grotesque as they are. They do not treat them as though they have any care, right, for anybody surrounding them, that for the mission. Right?
That's the one thing I'll give it credits for. They don't do the tedious, weepy bullshit of like guys will come to your country and then cry about it. They're just like, if anything, it does, I believe, reflect a change in vibes in the era, right? Like the Obama era of like, we'll come to your country, kill everyone, and then make a movie about how that made us sad. Now it's like, no, good. We want more of that. More, please. It's very concomitant with the times, with the whole like changing the name of soldiers to war fighters.
Yes.
It is a very war fighter type of movie.
And this is the perfect thing. This movie is so perfect in encapsulating how ridiculous that notion is.
Do you think Pete Hegseth has watched this movie in the...
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He beat off to this movie. I mean, he doesn't remember it because he's fucking apparently just shit hammered all the time. But like, so that transition, like Pete Hegseth, like... So I asked you guys to watch a review of the biggest asshole I could find.
Yeah.
Right? By the way, a guy,
call these people again, soldier fuckers,
troop fuckers. Right? This is like the biggest troop fucker I could find that has an actual presence on YouTube. Connor found, I wasn't even aware of this. This guy did like a ha ha video with like Sam Hyde a couple months ago. So like, just let that, you know, just let that sink in. Right.
Yeah.
And these kinds of guys, like the guys that like I interviewed after the showing, they're really torn about this film. Like, they like it and they will tell you that they, you know, enjoyed it and it was very realistic. And everyone that I've encountered has told me how brutal and painful it was to watch. Right. And Amr, like, I know that it's grotesque. I know that it's, you know, ultimately can be read by these guys as a celebration of, you know, of like the fortitude of the American, you know, war hero or whatever, like warrior. Yeah, like war fighter. But they, I think on some level, know that it doesn't show them that. There's no action here. There's no victory, right? We haven't really mentioned much, but like there's almost no enemy. Like the people shooting at them are shown in snippets. There's no on-screen deaths almost. There's one guy that gets shot like in an alleyway. But when the explosion goes off, it's just an explosion. And then there are dead people. There's no victorious action of these heroes, right, in reality. And by the way, like a thing that's so important, I think, is that the reason why I had such consternation about why like this mission was chosen is that it basically admits that the purpose of a lot of infantry action in Iraq and in other places is to directly put these guys, you know, as they would say, like in harm's way. It's to force engagement between them and the enemy to like flush them out so that they come out and shoot at you so that you can shoot back at them. And that directly puts our warfighters or whatever in these positions where they just get shot at and blown up. Right. So that we can use, you know, very, very expensive equipment to bail them back out of that. Right. And that's really difficult for like troop fuckers to parse. It's, by the way, something that vets will tell you all the fucking time. Right. Because it doesn't make them very happy. but the troop fuckers don't know that.
One thing I wanted to say about this troop fucker video that you sent us, Alec, he kind of goes off like, if soldiers came into my house and they destroyed it, I'd be like, are you going to fix this? You got to fix this. And Jocko, who's the Navy SEAL that has a podcast, he's like, Jocko says that in reality, they would come back and they would fix that house. I'm like, no, they fucking wouldn't.
Yeah.
No, they fucking, what likely happens is what was in the fucking movie, which is we're not even going to apologize or acknowledge what we did. We're getting the fuck out of here.
See you later.
And not only that, but in that video, if you watch this video, I don't even want to link it to the show description, Alec, because it's so – there are two moments of absolute depravity, which is like every now and then when a soldier has downtime, they like to goof around, and it shows a soldier like acting like a gorilla chasing these children.
Like
and
the children.
It does not look like the children are having fun. It looks like
they're not in on the joke. So this is like, oh, we're all having a good time. Like the kid, because think about it, right? For the average Iraqi, like child or not, like these are the guys who are taking over your country. They're armed to the fucking teeth. And like on the wrong day and the wrong afternoon, one of them gets pissed off. He'll mow you down. There's no recourse your family can do about it. Right.
And by the way, it's not like they don't know that they fucking hate you, right? That they are here explicitly to kill you over something that your country did not do, right? I mean, even Afghanistan didn't do fucking 9/11.
Yeah. But like they're all like, they're like, oh, these people hate us. They want to kill us. So like when the guy like is like, I'm going to be a gorilla and chase this kid around. Like as far as the kids are aware, like this guy lost his mind and he could very well kill me. Like what?
Yeah.
And the other annoying part of that fucking video was when he played the video of the drone strike on the Yemeni, and he's like, why don't they do that to the insurgents in Iraq? And I'm like, really? You think they didn't do that? You think they've been restrained by the rules of combat, sir?
Famously, a place where we didn't bomb people.
He cracks a joke over footage of the bombing of an Eid celebration. It is.
Yeah, it's gross. This is a troop fucker, by the way. This is what this movie is made for.
What I told Amr in our discussions leading up to the episode was like, this is the kind of guy who probably got rejected from the Air Force because he was like flat footed or something, and he was too much of a pussy to join the Marines. Like, he seems like someone who really had like a goal in mind. Sorry, Alec, we can cut this if you want, but do you remember when you really wanted to go to West Point?
I really wanted to go to the Naval Academy, which I almost got into because Amr, I was trying to fly F-18s, which apparently would have put me, I mean, years later, possibly doing show of forces, right? Like in fucking, I don't know, who knows where, Iraq. I mean, right now I would be, I guess, bombing Yemen.
Hey, you know what?
So thank God that didn't happen.
Well, hey, you know what? I'm in the same boat as you. Before I went to college, I tried to join the military because I come from a military family. I wanted to write for Stars and Stripes. And now I host a propaganda podcast. So complete 180. Very grateful that I
got rejected from the.
By the way, I'd like to point out Connor, like in that video. Thank you for like reminding me, right? That like as soon as this guy like attempts to maybe think about what it would be like to be an Iraqi, he's like, yeah, I probably would join a militia now that I think about it, but I don't have to feel that kind of guilt as an American because I was told by some absolute lying fucking moron, right, that we did like massive reparations to every Iraqi whose home we destroyed.
There are kids in Fallujah that are still born with deformities and cancer. Cancers in Fallujah are some of the highest rates in the world because the Americans used depleted uranium shells and white phosphorus. If this is true, if this whole reparations business is true, you'd think that area would be cleaned up. You'd think the houses there would be like nice and like, you know, not radioactive. But no, they're not, because the Americans were like, oh, it sucks to be you now and we're going to leave. Bye.
Yeah, your shit's fucked now, right? See you later. Yeah. I mean, in a political sense, right, I'd just like to say that it's so rare for those guys to even have that moment of like, internal kind of like cognition, of like self-realization, that I have to praise this movie on some level for like at least triggering the fuck out of them. And if you look at the comments of that video, by the way, you're going to see a lot of what I was talking about, which like, it was a brutal watch, man. It's really hard. I mean, like, I love the troops, but holy fuck, that was hard, right? Or a bunch of troops saying, I had to leave the movie theater. They were expecting Saving Private Ryan, and they did not get Saving Private Ryan. They got like Agony the film, right? This is the PTSD triggering film.
Which I have a question, Alex. If this movie came out when we were in high school and we wanted to join the military, do you think it would have dissuaded us or made us want to go through with it?
I'm extremely squeamish, right? And the more as a youngster...
You laughed at a guy's leg being thrown into the street.
That's because it makes me incredibly uncomfortable. Okay. And being right. Uncomfortable is where humor comes from. Okay. I mean, that's my line for why I don't... But like, I get very grossed out by gore. And this was, right, like very affecting. That being said, I've seen a bunch of Live Leak videos and guys getting run over by trucks and shot and exploded and all kinds of stuff, right? It's like, yeah. It is a perverse fascination. But I have to say that, like, I think as a young person, this would have been very effective, right? You will get blown up. Nobody can fucking save you. This guy, by the way, if there's any recompense at the end for like the like patting the back of the troops, right? This guy did lose his fucking leg and drives around in like an electric wheelchair now, right? Yeah. So like that's pretty brutal to show somebody. That's true, right? That is a real thing.
Well,
this guy cannot walk. He will never walk ever.
Until I see Nuremberg style trials for at least the officer class, if not the at least the operator class, if not the the overall military, I still consider this a victory for the Americans that he gets to go home and wheel around and molest the local waitress at his Applebee's and so on and so forth.
Fair enough.
I feel like there's such a for every warfare movie, there's like 8 movies to what Amr said of like, we went over and we killed like a bunch of people and now I'm sad at home. Like,
yeah,
there are movies that balance it out. So like you say like, hey, you could get bombed and never walk again. And in my head, I immediately was like, well, you could get Lieutenant Dan's magic legs. Like you could, you'll be fine. You could get the like Jacob Pistorius like crazy feet. Like you'll be all right.
And by the way,
the government will pay for you and then you'll get to go to college.
Most of those movies show those guys, right, those deaths happening off screen, or those guys die immediately, or, right, in the most annoying version, they do the, like, I'm not going to make it, bro, and, like, you know, last stand with, like, a grenade or a machine gun.
I can put it back in.
You don't get shown, or even that, I mean, you just don't get shown agony, right? And for, I totally understand, right, and I empathize and I understand for people that watch this film, or don't even watch it, listen to us talk about it and go, that sounds fucking gross. That sucks. I'm never going to see this. And this is bad. I'm telling you that I don't really feel that way. I enjoyed how grotesque it is and how accidentally honest it was about like who these guys are, because not enough movies do that. It has value just for that reason.
I do have a question on that point, and I want to open this up to everybody to what you said, Alec, about like, it's like, very honest in how it portrays some of these people. Alec, I asked you this question like last week or something, and this is kind of it's not my praise of the film, but it's a little bit of a defense of the film, as well as Alex Garland's Civil War. there's a lot of discourse, or there was a lot of discourse a few years ago about like Martin Scorsese versus Marvel movies, and people who were pro Marvel and anti Martin Scorsese are like, he makes violent movies, he glorifies violence, he glorifies gang violence. It's like, no, he's not. It's like, you watch The Sopranos and you know these are morons, these are bad people. You watch a Martin Scorsese movie, you think like, the people in Goodfellas are pieces of shit. They are not good. They are murderers. There's no one in these movies turning to the camera to say, this is bad, actually. And that's something that like I would happily praise Scorsese for. He doesn't spoon feed you anything. It's just like,
he doesn't
watch
moralize.
I think he does moralize, but because the ending of every movie is, wasn't that fun? Now look at how their life's ended.
Well, people have pointed to the fact that statements by Martin Scorsese might indicate that he does not actually think that these people are bad, right? That their stories are interesting, but that he's not really making anti-mob movies when he makes Casino or Goodfellas, right? But those movies are still enjoyed.
I think Goodfellas is anti-mob just because look at how...
So is Casino, for that matter, or The Irishman. I think part of it for me is like death of the author, right? Like, it doesn't matter what the author intends. It's for that reason that I think Civil War could be argued as good, is that it shows how like Kaylee Spaney essentially becomes like Kirsten Dunst by being like less and less, like her soul gets eaten away.
Right.
And also the last 20 minutes of like watching these fucking worm press for DC types get hacked down by like lunatics from Texas. Some of the greatest cinema on earth.
Omarosa gets shot is very funny.
Oh yes. I was like, all I could think of was Karine Jean-Pierre with that scene, and I'm like, hell yes. More of that, please. Yeah. You're right in that like I think culture has degraded so far to a point where like unless you have someone look directly into the camera and be like, so that happened and that's bad. Like
yeah.
Most audiences are swine. They want their slop in the trough. They're just oinking. They're banging their forks and knives on the trough. They want more slop. There's no appreciation of like film as a medium. And I don't think. I mean, I do sound like a snob right now, but I mean, I am. First of all,
well, we're all snobs here.
Yeah. And second of all, it's just like. You know, it's the same problem we had when everyone was like, Skyler from Breaking Bad is a bitch. And it's like,
yeah,
what?
Right.
You think you'd be okay if your spouse just started randomly murdering people and like
yeah.
turning your house into like a fucking cartel drug dealing situation? Like, what are we doing here?
And that's my ultimate question is, why does this movie and Civil War in particular feel like audiences wanted the director's stance to be spoon-fed to them? They wanted, you know, I absolutely love the ambiguity of Civil War because like we were talking about it at the beginning of this episode. Like, I don't want to be a, hey, you're talking about it kind of guy, but it was like, oh, this led, I talked about Civil War more than like most movies last year. Different conversations with different people. Not so much Warfare, just because to what Alex said, like nobody I know is seeing it. I mean, the Minecraft movie just came out. So yeah,
as of last weekend, Warfare made its money back. So they're not losing money on it, but it's $25 million on a $20 million budget, right?
Yeah.
And like I think Civil War made something like $127 million. So it's leagues between. Right. But like to your point, Connor, like that this is, as I said, like that this is so difficult to watch for an audience that is like the true fuckers want realism, right? They want their guns to be the guns that their kit, right? They're fucking.
They love using the word kit. Yeah.
Yeah. They're ACOGs, by the way, on like 4chan, we used to call this like gear queer, right? Like they love the shit that you can put on a gun. And for they really, really want some of them for that to be the exact same shit that like the SEALs use, right? They're obsessive about realism in movies. They're the kinds of guys like me sometimes that like count bullets, right? As people shoot them and like get annoyed when they should have run out of bullets, right? Like it's guys like that. And yet this film's realism somehow is painful to them. Like it's the inverse where I think you're kind of talking about maybe like leftist critique of this film or like the left, the anti-war crowd's critique of the film, but it goes for the opposite as well, right? they got what they wanted.
Speaking of leftists, by the way, one of the phrases from the movie Civil War that will like ring through two phrases from the movie Civil War that will ring in my skull until the day I die. Like the DMT will hit my skull and I'm like just seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And I'll hear the echo of the phrase Portland Maoists, and I will just start cackling maniacally as I enter the great beyond. That and the Antifa massacre of 2021 or whatever it is that Kaylee Spenny says. And I'm like, and again, it doesn't even tell you, like, did the Antifa do the massacre?
Yeah, were they massacred? Yeah. Nobody knows.
The Portland Maoists. All I can think of is like some dickhead fucking vegan type hippie guy, like, but like wearing a Maoist like uniform, the fucking cadres, and just like executing people on the street. It would be so sick, man.
A guy with a bicycle tattoo with like a Mao cap on, right? Like I don't know. Yeah, that, very funny mental image. So that's it for Warfare for me, guys. I don't know if you guys have any other comments or.
I have one thing to say when we're talking about troop fuckers. So to be completely fair to Alex Garland, he was basically like an assistant director on this film. This was really Ray Mendoza's directorial debut. Garland kind of helped him out. And this is because Mendoza was the military supervisor for Civil War, effectively making Alex Garland a troop fucker.
Well,
it's a favor for a favor, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. You make yours, I make my. I make my like bizarre vignette filled fantasy, right, of like what an American Civil War would look like as a Brit, and you get to make your true to self PTSD triggering, right, like real time movie about the Ramadi.
I can't believe this, but y'all are defending Garland now, and like Mendoza took a paycheck. I mean, show business is show business. I don't know if it's a favor. I think it was just like Mendoza would tell Garland these stories, and Garland, notably like a liberal centrist, was probably like, wow, that's fucking intense, lad. That's really cool that you're talking about this. We should make a movie about this.
Don't be a troop fucker. Be a troop's wife fucker. That's
definitely
what you need to do.
Be a Jody.
These people, they go over there, their wives are lonely, they need company. You know, do your part for the country.
Help them out. Yeah. There's still operators out there with lonely wives to this day. We don't have to be in Iraq for that to be the reality.
All right, Amr, do you have any closing words on Warfare?
Yes. I plan to. No, cut that.
By the way, Amr, Canadian politics, it's going down, dude. The libs are back and better than ever.
We're back. It's like 2008 never ended. We have our Obama again. We have our technocrat. Pierre locks to his own writing, which is hilarious. That's something you Americans can never experience because your executive and your legislative are two separate branches. So you can never experience, like, you know, Trump running for a fucking Congress district in Wyoming, a safe seat, that he then fucks it up somehow. That's a little quirk of the British model that is really fucking funny.
Never say never.
On the other hand, Jagmeet, the NDP candidate, also lost his riding. So it's liberals all the way down now. The liberal Reich is here.
For real. I don't know, by the way, Connor, I don't know if have you seen the graph of like the trajectory of like the polling where like the libs are going down, and then Trump inauguration and they just shoot every other party starts crashing and they like shoot back up to victory.
Well, it wasn't the inauguration itself, it was the tariffs. Was it tariffs stuff started kicking in? Yeah, that's when really it threw everything off kilt because well, it was a combination of tariffs and Justin Trudeau resigning because Trudeau was distinctly unpopular. Like as an individual, he was just taking the entire ship down with him. So when he did resign, a number of people who were like anyone but Trudeau, like sort of rallied back around the Liberals. And then the whole tariff stuff and you know, and the fact that it was Carney and not Freeland is a whole other thing. But like, that would be a whole other episode. I don't want to, you know.
Yeah. By the way, I think I told you, but like a Canadian friend of mine online was like, all the chuds I work with are like ready to become like the Canadian Mujahideen, like the beaver jihadists, right? And like plant IEDs on Canada One and like hide in the woods for the Americans. Like they were really, really like excited, right, for once, for like Canadian nationalism, to murder American troops.
That's the one thing that, like, the Radio Warner did an episode with Dan Bechner about the Canadian psyche, and I don't think Dan was explicit enough. I enjoyed the episode, don't get me wrong, but I was talking about that episode with a bunch of my Canadian friends who listened to Radio Warner, and they all had the same criticism, which is that he's giving Canadians too little credit when it comes to how rabid our own nationalism is. And like, our nationalism is just anti-Americanism. That's how we distinguish.
Yeah, it's supercharged, apparently. Like what my buddy Duffy was saying is like, these guys were so excited to finally have a reason to like go to war with America. Right,
they will, like, they've been waiting for this whole life. Would actually strap Semtex vests on to like take out three Marines at a checkpoint somewhere.
Yeah, like in like Calgary or some shit.
Like with the exception maybe of certain parts of Alberta and certain parts of the Toronto elite, most Canadians are rabidly, militantly anti-American.
Like maybe Timothy Snyder will walk him off a ledge, huh?
Oh God, no. I was talking to like sensible lib friends of mine who like, you know, take pride in their centrism, if you will. The real sensible types, right? And even they were saying, like, if the Americans invade, I'm going into the mountains to wage war. Like this, awesome. These are guys who like make like high six figure salaries, and like, it's not that their like lifestyle would be significantly altered. It might, it depends on how the annexation would go, but like, they were like, yeah, I'm leaving behind my video game consoles to join a Maoist regiment in the mountains.
I will die for Canada, for like our maple syrup rolling waves of wheat in like Saskatchewan or whatever, for our tar sands in Alberta.
I think I'll insert the Canadian anthem here.
Yeah, we should.
No, I'm starting to well.
I don't like it. It's a dog shit anthem.
This is funny.
Top five flags, not a top five anthem.
I actually have the Canadian anthem memorized. I memorized it when I was like in fifth grade, and it's still in my head.
Is it actually called O Canada? I have no idea what the Canadian anthem sounds like, what the words are. No idea.
Canada, our home and native land.
We're getting deported, Connor.
Stop.
I mean, Americans hear that anthem anyways because we play it at like whenever the Raptors come down to play guys or the Leafs or the
every time we get beat at hockey, we have to listen to it or something.
That was the first time I heard it is at a hockey game, and I was just like, "What is this?" And my parents are like, "Don't listen to that song," and I was like, "No, I need to know more about it."
Well, Amr, in case you didn't know what to do, you can now show other Canadians what you do when Bradleys roll up into your town. Okay. Whenever you're suspicious that the house next door may have been taken by an American SEAL team, you can show them how you, with you know, items you might have in your household, can easily dissuade them from ever coming back.
Look, I know I do not have the physical fitness or capacity to be like an elite tier operator, right? That's not my role in the jihad against Americans. My role is to drive a truck full of fertilizer into checkpoint 311 outside of Toronto, and like five American recruits from Oklahoma will be sent to their parents in like plastic bags.
Yeah. Do you think Drake would get deported? He probably would.
Kendrick will execute Drake in public.
Yeah, for sex crimes.
Yes.
This is sounding better and better, I'm not gonna lie.
So we're.
It sounds like everybody wins.
This episode is almost as long as the movie itself.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Amr, we originally wanted to have you on to talk about a movie called Warrior from 2011. We are going to have you back on because Alec and I both watched that 2.5 hour film. And you owe us a conversation on it, so we will have.
I have seen it before. And Amr's take
is the most Obama movie of all time.
Yes, it's the most Obama movie of all time, especially in that it is so imminently forgettable that I'm pretty sure that's the third time I've seen it. And like, I really have to try to tell you like various events in the film.
It's got military PTSD. It's got opioid addiction. The only thing missing from the Obama era, I mean, it's got house foreclosures, working multiple jobs. Yeah. The only thing missing is like technological solutionism. or Silicon Valley solutionism. That's the only thing missing from this. They should have been like,
but that's
oh.
the funny part. That's what made the movie so Obama-esque to me, is that the problems, and can I do a spoiler here? Can I just say a fucking plot?
Yeah.
Look, the basic premise in the movie are there's a UFC UFC-style competition that some VC
won. A knockoff.
He's like, you know, it's a knockout. You know, you fight, and then the winner, like the purse is like some number of millions of dollars, and these two brothers who like as kids. One of them runs away with the mom. One of them stays with the dad. The dad's an alcoholic. Great Nick Nolte. Great performance. Probably one of the most heartbreaking performances I've seen. And the brother that remains because he was the older and he had a girlfriend in town that he didn't want to leave. That girlfriend becomes his wife, etc.
Smoking hot. Holy shit.
Yeah, Jennifer Morrison from House Fave, excellent babe. And the one who does leave, Tom Hardy, leaves with the mom. The mom dies. He joins the Marines, gets involved in some sort of friendly fire incident where, like, the Air Force blows up a few Marine convoys in Iraq. It's not even clear if it's Iraq or Afghanistan, one of the two, probably Iraq. And he's like, he realizes that this is friendly fire and they kill his best friend. And he comes back AWOL, leaves without, like, you know, he goes AWOL. And they both join this UFC competition because they grew up as kids wrestling and their dad taught them, mixed martial arts. And they both join it. The Marine wants to make or win the money for his comrade who died in the friendly fire incident in Iraq to give it to the comrade's widow, wife and kids. Yeah, his widow and kids. The other brother wants to win it because their house is getting foreclosed on because the mortgages are piling up and he's like a high school teacher that doesn't make any money whatsoever because...
And his kid has like a heart condition or something. Like,
he needed open heart surgery.
He remortgaged the house for open heart surgery. So when I say it's the Obama movie, it's like, you know, failing healthcare, like a completely bankrupt healthcare system, opioid addiction on one fighter, Iraq war, like complete disaster, and Americans are killing each other. They don't know what's going on over there. It's completely like total hopelessness. The mortgage crisis, you know, the financial crisis, and mortgages everywhere. All of this, and there's no political solution. There's not even a technological solution now. No, you have to fight to the death to make money. And I think that's the most, like, symptom, like it reveals Obama at his core. It's like, I'm here for the vibes, man. There's no solution. You want money for your house or for your kid or for the widow of your best friend. You got to beat the crap out of your brother to make it. That's it. That's the deal,
solution
pal.
Is blood sport for a cheering crowd. Like people that love to see your arm get like snapped off. Right.
It's just nice to have Hollywood acknowledge white suffering for a change.
Jesus. Yeah, Irish suffering. Yeah. We were slaves as well.
Yeah, Tom Hardy with the most baffling, incoherent accent ever that's saying something.
Amr will return for Warrior, a film made entirely out of cliches.
But before we wrap, Amr, you have a new podcast that I absolutely love, and I'd love for you to talk about it. It is called Hell to Pay. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yes. So me and my two friends, Al and Sipo, have made a new podcast called Hell to Pay. You can find us on all the platforms. We do things like nationalism, the deep state, cults, institutional religion, and how they all intersect to make your life a lot more miserable and to make someone somewhere very rich, which is how all these things have to happen. But there's also sex crimes involved, as often with these things.
And if you hate Elon Musk, there's a great episode 2 is all about the
Broder Bond.
The white nationalism that shaped Elon Musk.
Yes, my friend Sipo would be remiss. He'd be angry with me if I don't clarify everywhere I go. Elon is not a Boer. He's, in fact, thinks somehow even worse than Boers, which is Anglo South Africans who hate the Boers and are hated by them in turn. Because they think the Boers are yokels and the Boers see the Anglos as like the real aristocracy, which they are. But yes, Elon is spiritually Boer though. He behaves in the same like, you know, ogreish way that Boers do. But yeah, please check us out. It's a good podcast. My friends and I hang out and we talk, and it's usually how these podcasts have to work.
Yeah, all right. Really, really good. Well, Amr, thank you so much. And to everyone listening at home,
pleasure.
Yeah, as always. Yeah. As
thanks a lot for Warrior, coming on. Thanks worry. A lot. Thanks a lot for watching Warfare. But we will get you back because we had to watch Warrior, and by the time you come back on, I might have to watch it again. So it's really brutal, folks.
Well, listeners, as always, Excelsior, and keep your eyes on the skies.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Connor here. I wanted to take this time to address and express my appreciation for our Canadian listeners. You know, according to the analytics, we have about five of y'all up in our neighbors to the north, mostly all in Toronto, it seems. But, you know, we just want to, and I'm speaking for Alec here, of course, but we just want to say thank you for all that you do, all of your patience for dealing with us. And, well, this is for you. Canada, our home and native land, true patriot love, and all thy sons command. With glowing hearts we see thee rise, the true north, strong and free. From far and wide, O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. God, keep our land glorious and free. There you go, you maple-loving maniacs. Thanks for listening.